Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be out in the big beautiful world. Welcome or welcome back. This is Out of the Abyss with Lot, Pip, and Jake.
Hello.
Hello.
Last week, we covered one of my personal favorites, the Hopkinsville Goblins. We looked at the original...
That's a banger, dude.
Yeah. The original encounter in the 50s, the legends that surrounded the area, and the newer purported happenings over the last decade that we don't really have any evidence of. That one's all via email. But still, bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys think it's possible that it was owls?
Not really. Owls don't have hands. These things sounded like they had hands. I
mean, the weirdest thing was just like when we started talking about the copper mines and whatever those creatures were called. Like, that was just kind of like, yeah, there's no way at that point, you know?
A specific breed of copper-eating owls.
I guess so.
I guess? Should have looked more into the properties of copper? Like, why were they specifically into copper?
Well, do you remember...
I think it was just, like, the mine, right?
Yeah, that was...
I don't know exactly if it's the metal itself, but it might be the location.
That was the folklore, was that they lived in copper mines. But remember, we were... In the Hill case, they were talking about how the aliens liked nitrogen. Or nitrates. Nitrates.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Maybe there was something in the mines.
Maybe there was nitrates in the mines.
We're figuring it out, dude. One chemical at a time.
Nitrate.
Oh.
One more piece in the puzzle. This week, we got something not too dissimilar. Let's learn about the Men in Black. The Men in Black.
Will Smith, though.
Not like Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. This is a much less fun. So, yeah. The Men in Black, shortened heretofore to MIB. And I've heard MIB or MIBs used, but I refuse to cave to that silliness unless it becomes entirely convenient, are supposed entities that threaten people with UFO information. Their appearance shifts subtly from report to report. They're noted as being tall, sometimes they're super short. Usually they're very pale. And of course, they're in their eponymous black suits. Some reports have noted that the people appear to be wearing makeup, and not like fun, let's go to the club and stand in a circle makeup, but like, we need to make you look human in the coffin even though you've been disassembled and put back together makeup.
Huh. I've heard of, what is it, they've all got, like, hats as well? Or they used to?
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, most of them had, like, Homburg-style hats.
Yeah.
My only knowledge of Men in Black comes from the movies, honestly. I don't know anything about the real organization.
That's exciting.
I did some digging years ago because I got curious on the topic, and... I think there was a lot of reports of them, like, not quite seeing, like, people. Like, their behavior was never quite right, or the movements were always a little off. And also, for some reason, I think there was instances of people trying to catch them on camera, and it just never quite worked.
There are some pictures, I didn't include them in the dossier this episode, but, like, yeah, there are pictures that people have taken of people in black suits with black hats and black sunglasses, which, unfortunately, that's just not enough to, like, mean anything.
I mean, that could have been the Blues Brother.
That could just be some dudes. But they do all this weird activity. Sometimes they'll just show up and stare. Sometimes they overtly threaten people. At least once they even did some kind of, like, magic.
Weirdly, I have not heard of that.
Yeah. There's a lot of instances of them just showing up and taking pictures of people.
That's scary. Because if you're up to anything, even if you're not up to anything, you see a dude in a suit with a reputation like that taking a picture of you, start getting worried.
Yeah. Now, a lot of MIB sightings come from the usual suspects of UFO research, right? Overly credulous and often lonely people. And I'm sorry if that offends anyone in the community, but let's be real for a minute. If UFO investigators want to be taken seriously, they do, at the end of the day, need a higher level of reliability than someone who just, like, saw a hawk in the sky or something. That's just how it is. People are going to hold you up to a more rigorous standard. What if I told you that Dan Aykroyd, Dan Aykroyd?
Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd. Aykroyd?
I'm pretty sure it's Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd? I think the Y is silent.
A lot of people are going to be mad at me for not knowing how that's pronounced. I'm sorry, I'm not old enough.
Sorry, Aykroydians.
Dan Aykroyd had an MIB experience.
Tell us about this.
I will, later. And it was even post-drug Dan Aykroyd, so... So...
Did the Men in Black give him the drugs?
Oh, no. This is years after. They were the drugs. It was that episode of Metalocalypse with the totally sweet Alabama liquid awesome snake.
Great show, dude.
Good pull.
So, to begin at the beginning here, we got to turn the clock back all the way to June 21st, 1947. Maury Island incident occurred, with UFOs being sighted over Maury Island in Puget Sound, which I'm pretty sure is in Washington, so like just south of British Columbia over that border.
Oh.
Right.
That's closer to me than I thought that it would have been.
Yeah. Fred Crisman and Harold Dahl told famous aviator Kenneth Arnold, who was one of the first people ever to actually witness a flying saucer, Kenneth Arnold. So these two guys told Kenneth Arnold that while they were on a work boat, they had seen six donut-shaped objects in the sky. They claimed that one of these things had dropped a gloopy substance like lava or something onto their boat, which broke one person's arm and killed a dog. Dahl also claimed that he was later approached by a man in a dark suit and told not to talk about the incident. Arnold took these claims pretty seriously, and he contacted an Air Force intelligence officer who flew in with a coworker. And the officers concluded that the metal was just aluminum, so it wasn't worth investigating. But they didn't tell that to Arnold, and then their plane crashed on the way back to California, and they both died.
Huh.
So the FBI picked up the investigation, looked at it, said, nah, that's just a hoax. Don't even worry about it. Interesting to note is that this occurred very near Mount Rainier, which is really noted as being like a paranormal hotspot with a lot of UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, missing people, all that stuff that we talk about.
Hmm.
It's a little sus, dude.
A little bit? Alright. Let's I wanna see how suspicious we can make you. Now, okay. Next case, we get to talk about one of the more famous ones. Albert K. Bender. Born in 1921, he was a factory clerk, but interested in the supernatural. To give you an idea about who he was as a person, during high school he was part of the American Youth League, serving as their junior vice president, and later as their national treasurer. So he was like the super nerdy version of a student council kid. He was a student council kid, but on a national level.
Dang, high level, that nerdy kid.
Yeah, he served in the military for a while as a dental technician, and then became an editor for an army newspaper.
That's the nerdiest way to be in the military.
Yeah.
Not even like the guy that drives like the mind disarming robot. He's a dentist.
Dental just technician.
A fucking dentist, dude.
This guy sounds like a human accountant.
So, in 1952, our hero, the accountant, founded the International Flying Saucer Bureau, the first major civilian UFO club in the world. But just 1 year later, he would shut the whole thing down. At first, everything was great. They were sending out invitations to celebrities, had 600 worldwide members. They even had a newsletter that went out detailing recent sightings called Space Review.
Oh, that's a snappy name.
Oh, yeah. But soon after...
You could have made so many good names, you know, with Space Review.
Oh, come on, dude.
The review in space.
Running on empty, Space Review.
And don't forget that this is in 1952, so
it's kind of the
50s. That stuff wasn't done out yet.
It is a 50s. Sure.
Problems that after he started the IFSB, he started experiencing really strange things. Ill health, strange phone calls, even this weird sensation like he was receiving telepathic messages. At the same time, where he lived in Southern Connecticut, was being hit with a rash of saucer sightings. It's called a UFO flap. Huh. Additionally, Bender couldn't shake the sensation of being watched. He claims that one time he went to the movie theater, and on his way home, a strange man with glowing eyes followed him home. And another time, he claims that he was put into a state of hypnosis and levitated right on Broad Street during the night. Finally, a hideous, sickening stench of burning sulfur would sometimes fill up his attic bedroom, making him nauseous and giving him headaches. Despite this, he pressed on. He even developed the idea for an experiment. See, since he'd been receiving telepathic messages demanding that he cease his work, he figured, could we send messages back, like to space? Not him personally, but maybe a whole bunch of people together? So, he told his friends in the IFSB, this went out in the newsletter, to concentrate on a message all at the same time on the same day, and they were going to try to, like, crowdsource a telepathic message to the stars to try to reach out and communicate.
Listen, I get it. I understand the logic of it, right? That follows.
Sure, sure.
All right, listen, if you're capable of receiving, that's always two-way, right? But he has he's got a reasonable doubt of the capacity for human telepathy. So maybe if we're all really weak, we gotta team up.
It's fair enough to say that if you were getting telepathic messages telling you to quit your UFO research, would you not from that infer that maybe you can also like use telepathy somehow? Like everybody's tried to be telepathic and it doesn't work, but like I don't know. It's not the craziest idea I've ever heard.
That's a topic for another episode, I think.
The sending and receiving of telepathic messages aren't, like, mutually exclusive, right? Like, you could definitely have one without the other.
100%. In theory, yeah, but I mean, since we know that telepathy doesn't exist, or at least we've never experienced it, if you suddenly experienced it one way, like, it's reasonable to assume that it can be done the other way, too.
Hot
take.
All right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
All right. Okay. So my figure is if you experience that at all, that opens the door wide for, telepathy is a thing. Why not try everything you can with it?
Okay. All right. My turn to have a hot take. Maybe it's not telepathic. Maybe he's just going crazy. He doesn't want to do it anymore.
Was this before or after MKUltra?
I think this was a little before. Maybe it was during, actually.
There you go.
Because I think
that solves the problem, dude.
I'm pretty sure I've heard of instances of, accusations of governments, like, using LSD to discredit people and make them act crazy? And, was it?
True.
I don't know if you talk about it in this thing, but high strangeness.
Yeah, we get some high strangeness in this one. In a lot of UFO stuff. The message they sent out, by the way, would become super famous. Jake, you've probably heard this one. Because it became the hook for a song by a Canadian prog rock band called Klaatu that the Carpenters later covered.
Okay.
The message was calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
Calling occupants
of interplanetary craft that have been observing our planet Earth. We of IFSB wish to make contact with you. We are your friends. The planet day of contact, March 15th, is still observed by UFO enthusiasts as World Contact Day every year.
Oh man, I wish I had known about that like 2 weeks ago.
Right? Still, I don't know, I liked learning that, and then, like, I read that message, and I was, like, vibing to that song for a little bit. I wrote half that script listening to the Carpenters version of that song, just cranked up.
Yeah, I'm pulling up right now, dude.
So, as soon as the newsletter detailing his plans was sent out, the assaults on Bender redoubled. The stench in his room became basically permanent, and the telepathic messages insisted that he stop interfering in things that were not his concern. But Bender was not about to be moved from his path. He announced proudly that his July issue of Space Review would have a startling revelation, an answer that they had been seeking. But it would never appear in print. In early July, Bender was visited by three men in black clothes. He claimed that they looked like clergymen, but with hats in the Homburg style, which is like a fedora, but kind of rounded a little bit.
Right.
The stereotypical men in black hat. They told Bender to quit his work with UFOs. And then before leaving, they took all copies of Space Review, looked at him, whereupon he got the telepathic message, "Stop publishing." And then they left. And as they left, a yellow fog rose up that smelled of burned sulfur.
There's some very distinct physical properties listed there about yellow fog, smells of burned sulfur.
Yeah, this fucking ninjutsu smoke bomb out of there, dude.
Any chemists in the chat, they can identify that?
So, would you have the balls to still publish if that happened to you?
I would like to say I would. I really would like to say I would. But also, I would probably likely just take that to my grave.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I would love to be able to stand up to the fucking fog monster, but...
Actually, I will probably do, like, one last one being like, hey, this is the official final publishing for reasons that I'm not able to disclose. And kind of, you know, toe the line a little, like, right on, like, yeah, I'm stopping.
Quiet call for help, dude.
I told you I am agreeing, but also
they
break the rules as much as possible.
They got JFK. You don't think they can get me? So, this happened. Bender was so scared that he did not eat for days, which is bad news for him because that wouldn't be the last time he saw them. In fact, if you look back, there's actually old newspaper headlines from the Bridgeport Sunday Herald talking about three men visiting Bender and threatening him, although Bender did leave out a lot of the more radical details in the newspaper reports until his anxiety about the visits lessened. Because, I mean, understand, if that happened to you, you also wouldn't be, like, popping off telling everyone exactly what happened. You'd be like, holy fuck.
Yeah, fair.
Eventually he was worn down. It was just all too much. The headaches and the telepathic messages and the threats. In October 1953, Bender released the final edition of Space Review, which included the creepy message, "The mystery of the flying saucers is no longer a mystery." The source is already known, but any information about this is being withheld by orders from a higher source. We would like to print the full story in Space Review, but because of the nature of the information, we have been advised in the negative. We advise those engaged in saucer work to be very cautious. He shut down the organization, gave up his UFO hunting lifestyle, and moved to California, where he passed away at the age of 94 in 2016. For those a little more conspiratorially minded, it's worth noting that his home at 784 Broad Street was bulldozed only a couple of years later, after he'd moved out, to make room for a parking lot and a throughway. But still, some people are very suspicious about that.
You wanna destroy a cause, you wanna erase it, right? This man was kind of like the head of that organization, and they drove him out of it, and they erased his home, so even after death, people couldn't go visit.
Yep. How you feeling about that one, Jake?
I don't know about that. I feel like you're reading a little bit much into the demolishing of his home.
That's what they want you to think.
That is what they want you to think.
Where are they?
The Mibs.
Mibs. Sorry, I just have this image of PewDiePie fucking saying Space Review in my head right now.
Oh no. That's how we get the Men in Black. We have to convert PewDiePie into a space truther.
I'm going to ask him for his opinion on alien life, and if we get it, I will put it in the podcast. How's that sound?
Sure, dude. Hey, Pewds. Aliens, yeah or no?
Yeah or no?
I need a voice clip for my podcast. How do you feel about extraterrestrial life?
Can you just say Space Review for me real quick?
So, next up, my man John Keel. He is the author who wrote The Mothman Prophecies. He was a journalist. He was a journalist around Point Pleasant when all that happened. And here's where we get eventually to some of your real spicy high strangeness. John Keel collected a bunch of stories regarding the MIB during and after his time at Point Pleasant because they were so prevalent. And they're the oddest stories. Mrs. Ralph Butler in Minnesota got a visit from a MIB in May of 1967. His clothing all appeared brand new, even the soles of his shoes. She offered him some Jell-O and he tried to drink it, and then acted like he'd never seen it before. I read another report of someone else offering Jell-O to an MIB, and he put it in a napkin, folded it up, and then put it in his pocket for later.
I am gonna start keeping Jell-O on hand for guests.
That's a filthy Frank bit. A waitress around the same time claimed that some MIB came into her diner and ordered food, and they were talking loudly, and it was kind of nonsensical. And The waitress had to show the guy how to cut his steak, because he was just like looking at this piece of meat, like not understanding it. And once it was cut, the guy, he just swallowed the cubes of meat whole. No chewing. He would just pop one in his mouth and just like, gone.
Well, that sounds a little less like high strangeness and like things that aren't quite able to fully appear human. Like the disguise is there, but the behavior ain't. Their acting is bad.
Keel noted in a 1986 lecture that often after people reported something unusual, they'd report a black Cadillac pulling up to their house with men in black suits stepping out of the car and taking photographs of the house and then leaving. Apparently, one witness had recently had a baby, and some men in black suits claimed to be photographers and offered to photograph the child. The parents were delighted, and the men set up their equipment, took the pictures, gave the family a fake business card, and then never came back to sell them the actual photographs.
Got rude.
Call it rude.
That's a nice baby. You mind if we take some pictures? No. You weirdos.
I guess that wouldn't fly in the current year, dude.
Yeah, I guess the 80s were different.
It's a different time. People were a lot more trusting, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Keel further notes that a lot of the people connected to the Point Pleasant Silver Bridge disaster, which was famously related to Mothman, said that they were contacted and interviewed by the men in black. My favorite is the story of Mary Heyer, one of his friends and associates. So in January of 1967, she has this strange, short man with a black square cut hair, enter her office. He's like 4'6", and he had shoes on that seemed to have a thickened sole, which made him look closer to 4'8". He asked for directions to the town of Welsh, which was nearby, but he kept getting closer and closer to her as he talked, just staring into her eyes as if he wanted to hypnotize her or something. Mary got freaked out, and she rang up her district manager that was in the same building to come and stand in her office with her. She said that at one point her phone rang when she was talking to the man. She answers the phone. While she's talking on the phone, this strange man picks up a ballpoint pen off of her desk. He's amazed by this pen. He's like, what the hell is this? And then he laughs loudly, pockets the pen, and runs out of the office.
What is the point of that?
Like, he got a pen.
To what?
Fuck yeah, he did, dude.
Yeah, he did. To what end? Man, he had the suit too, right?
Yeah.
Just a little weirdo.
With thickened soles, dude. Those 2 inches are important.
He's just self-conscious. Platform shoes.
You need it.
You ever seen a manlet before? They got that energy, dude. They need those extra inches.
They do. They do all have the heightened soles. That's a fact. The next month.
I mean, I think it's sort of like... Sorry to cut you off. I think it's sort of... quick to just assume this man is like an alien or something. It could just be a very weird person.
Yeah.
Or someone with like a disorder or something, right?
The fact that he's like a short dude with platforms makes him seem a lot more human, despite how wild out his behavior was.
And like, if you were an alien, right, like impersonating people, okay?
Yeah.
Why the fuck could you impersonate a short person?
True.
Why wouldn't you try to appear as normal as possible? You know what I mean?
Maybe the aliens, their manager was like, listen, we gotta mix it up. You all look the damn same. They're starting to catch on.
Yeah, so we're gonna make you small and weird and amazed by pens.
Imagine having to be the alien.
Not gonna raise any red flags with that one, dude.
Imagine being the alien that draws the short straw.
You have to wear the short suit.
Okay, dude.
I keep thinking of this guy as looking like Mr. Incredible's boss in the first Incredibles movie.
Dude, that's exactly the image I had in my mind, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the next month, on the morning of February 22nd, 1967, Mothman witness Connie Carpenter was walking to school when a black Buick pulled up beside her. A young man got out, wearing a dark suit, and grabbed her arm, telling her that she had to come with him. She got away, tearing the sleeve of her blouse in the attempt. She ran back to her house, which, by the way, don't ever do that if something bad happens to you, running straight home, because people can just follow you there. The idea is to kind of run a little loop and lose them and then go home.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't... Get away tips from out of the abyss.
I got you. See, she didn't know that, so the next day, slipped under her front door was a note that read, "Be careful, girl. I can get you yet."
Ooh.
Spooky.
Then, on May 5th, Mary Heyer saw the same little weird guy from her office. This time, he was wearing a khaki-colored uniform, but when he saw her, he looked super surprised and then booked it to a nearby red car, got in, and meep-meeped out of there. Huh. 3 days later, Mary was arriving home from work when a black car pulled up to her house. She turned to look at it, and the driver snapped a picture of her, which disoriented her with that big old flashbulb, and then the driver just took off. Just drove off.
Yeah, I miss them big old flashbulbs.
I think our current system was a lot better.
I don't know. I feel like there's kind of a charm to it. You hear that big, like, the sound of it going. You don't get that with phones nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, charm and, like, being good technology are very different things, though.
I guess. Maybe I just have an old soul. Souls is an idea. Topic.
Mary Heyer would encounter the MIB one more time. In December of that same year, two men walked into her office, both short, both in black. They asked her about UFO sightings that had happened locally. Mary's a reporter. She gives them a great big folder of stuff with like press clippings. But they didn't actually seem to care about it. They just held the folder in their hands, didn't look at it, and then asked her what she would do if someone told her to stop writing about UFOs. She told them that she would probably tell whoever said that to drop dead. The men looked at one another and then left. Mary would pass several years later in 1970, aged 55.
Mm. All right, so here's my problem with this. These men in black, who are apparently short in this story, are like a super powerful organization of aliens trying to stop people from telling other people about aliens. TLDR, right? I'm caught up.
That seems like the gist, yes.
I think so.
Okay. So how come they're like, hey girl, you want to stop doing it? No? Okay, cool, we tried. See you never. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
I mean, in their defense, that's a lot more subtle than a cloud of sulfurous smoke and being levitated in the street.
Sure, but that's a lot more effective than just being like, oh, shit, you want to stop doing it? No? Okay, cool. I bothered you, ma'am. I'll leave you alone.
Because that...
one of them worked, one of them didn't. Therefore, more effective. Hello? Were you following, dude?
Being dead quietly a few years later is a lot more subtle than a guy having to... making a public newsletter saying, hey, it's all true, but I can't talk about it.
Several years, I don't know, it seems like a long period of time, unless it's like a super slow process. I don't know, dude.
That's how you
it
do it. You gotta do it years later, because if it happens right away, it's suspicious.
See, I'm not so much interested.
Did she publish any more articles from, like, the meeting till her death? Probably. I imagine she would have.
I mean, if I was to burn down the previous employer's place, I wouldn't do it right after I was fired.
I'm not so interested in the death as I am in the actual visit. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it's related. I just felt like it was important that I wrap up Mary Heyer's story at the end. What did you guys think about the visit?
Very weird.
It seems strange, but I'm not going to say, like, supernatural or extraterrestrial or anything. It just seems a little fucking weird.
Yeah. That one's, it's harder to discredit. It just seems, it's way easier to chalk up as just being weird. Which is maybe the plan, right?
Yeah.
They've weaponized strangeness.
Now, John Keel himself wasn't free of MIB visits either. He would try to chase the MIB whenever someone told him where they'd been, but he always arrived late. If he got a license plate number, he would give it to the police, and the police would respond that that number didn't exist. In one of the strangest things I've ever heard, a mysterious blonde lady in her 30s with a southern accent was visiting people that Keel had interviewed, claiming to be his secretary. She would ask people about their sightings, as well as detailed personal information, like health info, what kind of cars people owned, where they worked and when, what their parents' names were, really intrusive shit. Keel didn't even know about this woman until months later, when one of his friends mentioned her casually in a conversation about something else. Oh yeah, I had a visit from that secretary.
Ah.
My what?
That's a little spook, actually. Yeah.
That's so, clever way to piggyback off of somebody else's credibility.
Yeah. To move away from the esteemed Mr. Keel, who we will have a full episode on one day, we get to Dr. Herbert Hopkins. Dr. Hopkins was working as a consultant for a UFO investigation in New England. He got a call from someone claiming to be an activist in the UFO community who wanted to ask him some questions in person. The good doctor agreed, and instantly, he hangs up the phone and someone's knocking on his door. So he answers the door. It's a man wearing a black suit and a black tie with no hair, no eyebrows, and extremely pale skin. Dr. Hopkins' dog immediately started losing its shit as soon as the man entered their home. They talked about the UFO case, and as soon as that concluded, things got really weird. According to the website The Night Sky, here's how it unfolded. The man in black informed Hopkins that there were two coins in Hopkins' pocket, which was correct, and asked him to remove one. Hopkins complied and held the coin, a shiny new penny, in the palm of his hand. The MIB told Hopkins to watch the coin closely. After a few minutes, the coin took on a silvery color and then appeared to go out of focus. It began to fade and then disappear. The MIB informed Hopkins that the coin would never be seen on this plane again. He then inquired as to whether Hopkins was familiar with alleged UFO abductee Barney Hill. Hopkins replied that he'd heard of Hill, but was under the impression that he had recently died. The MIB informed Hopkins that he was correct. Barney didn't have a heart, the MIB said, just like you no longer have a coin.
Ooh.
It should be noted that Barney actually died of a cerebral hemorrhage and not a heart issue. But still.
I mean, I'm not well versed in the story. That would have got me.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The MIB then gently suggested that Hopkins destroy any material that he had related to the UFO case. And Hopkins did as he was told.
Dude, this guy came into my fucking house and just made something disappear in front of me after it, like, transforming. I'd probably do it too. It's just fucking spooky.
Yeah. You threatened to do that to one of your organs?
Yeah.
That's what I mean, right?
Yeah, that's not sleight of hand. Like, you're the one holding the coin, and it just fades from reality? Ooh.
Yeah.
All right, this guy's pretty credible. That's a valid
you
threat.
You do that, then you threaten me with it? Yeah, okay, whatever you need, dude. Sure.
You got it. You want my shoes? I'll give you whatever you want.
You want my platform shoes? You short, dude.
Okay, can you hold that coin a little lower?
Oh god.
That's content. Do you think it would have gone better for him if he started doing coin tricks to try to impress the MIB?
Maybe. You've got coins in your pocket. Oh, actually, it's behind your ear.
Isn't that crazy?
Hopkins was found dead the
next day.
Busted
a deck of cards, dude. Is this your card? How about this? It's gotta be this one.
So finally, if least impressively, we get to the man himself, Dan Aykroyd, and his encounter with the MIB. Dan was filming a show about the paranormal when he got a call from Britney Spears. Britney was going to be on Saturday Night Live and was hoping that Dan would appear with her because, you know, he's a seasoned Saturday Night Live vet. While he was outside on the phone, he noticed a black Ford that was parked across the street. A tall man stepped out of the car and stared him down. Dan turned away for a moment, but when he turned back, the man and the car were both just gone. No sounds from the car moving or starting, just gone. He finished his call, went back inside, where he was immediately told that his show was canceled and that filming had to be halted immediately. Dan maintains that this was the MIB and that they were involved in the canceling of his show.
Huh.
True facts. So, doing this research, I've read a lot of theories. I've heard people suggest that the MIB are actually aliens. I've heard people suggest that they're reanimated corpses doing the government's work. I've heard that they work for the Illuminati. One of my favorite theories was the theory that Bender's attempt to get people to communicate with the stars opened up some kind of occult gateway and allowed these beings into our reality. What do you guys think? Delusions, mass hysteria, people making it up, is it real? Are they aliens?
I do kind of like the line of thinking with the gateway thing.
I mean, like, I think it's just confirmation bias, right? To a degree.
Well,
I don't know if they're necessarily connected as people think they are, and they're just like weird people doing weird stuff, you know?
I mean, yeah, it could be disparate groups. It could just be a bunch of copycats based off of, like, some of the stories, right? Because, I mean, I personally would love to get, like, a black Cadillac in a suit and just, like, spook people.
But I mean, that's
swallow your steak whole or something, you know.
Yeah. The idea of a bunch of people working together and channeling like energy and opening some kind of gateway is very much in line with like chaos magic and occultism and what they believe.
Yeah, and like, I'm not discrediting that's a possibility, but I'm saying all these stories, there's no clear link other than they wear black suits, which isn't exactly like a huge uniform thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone wears fucking black suits because everyone looks good in a black suit.
Especially back in like the 50s.
Yeah, exactly. With how different like all these people are acting towards the people they're talking to in these stories, right? Like you have one dude who's like, oh, you want me to drop dead? Okay, I'll see you later. And then you have another dude like, I'll fucking find you, girl. Like, very clear different method of operations, you know?
Not one, you know, this is disappointing to me. Not one person in this entire episode went into a house, was offered a glass of water, and was like, sugar. Sugar and water.
Yeah.
More.
Exactly.
Would you like some
Jell-O?
I need to
watch Men in Black after this, dude.
Yeah.
That's honestly, that's one of the best scenes in film history.
I agree, dude.
Straight up.
So uncomfortable.
Your face doesn't look right, and he just grabs the skin and yanks it back. Is this better? Holy fuck. Dude, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, the writing on that was really good.
Yep. Love that we had this serious episode about, like, intense visitations and, like, people being threatened and all of this stuff, and I just had to drop
stuck
that.
Stuck Will Smith, dude.
That Vincent D'Onofrio reference.
My only concern with that gateway thing is, like, did the Men in Black show up before that? I thought they had met with him.
I think that...
That person?
No, they met with him afterwards, but he had those weird encounters.
Okay, but let's humor this idea for a second, yeah? So yeah. Assuming people opened up this gateway with their mind, okay? Why would the Men in Black come to this plane, as they put it, and be like, all right, guys, seriously, stop. Like, why is that a thing?
shits and gigs?
Either they're malevolent, or they're benevolent, right? It's one of the others. And if they're benevolent, maybe they're trying to stop us from finding something dangerous?
I mean, like, my first thought is, like, not necessarily so much of that. It's more like, maybe, with all these people opening up this gateway or whatever, like, it's, like, stealing people from their world or something. They're like, all right, guys, here's what the fuck, quit it, right? That'd be my first thought about it, but I think it's a little far-fetched, you know what I mean?
Walking down the street, a portal just opens in the sky, and you're just like, whoa, and, like, get pulled into it.
I mean, no, like, actually, like...
You've seen those videos people on the other falling into sinkholes, right?
Those damn people on the other side of the veil are opening up interdimensional portals using their thought patterns again. Tell them to go knock it off. This is just the interdimensional version of grabbing a broomstick and banging on the roof when your upstairs neighbor is really loud.
So I recently watched...
They gotta send the cosmic landlord to tell us to stop.
I recently watched The Irregulars, right? It's a series on Netflix. It's not great, but it's alright, you know. But the basic premise is that, like, there's a veil between life and death, or different universes, right? And when one opens, it tries to consume the other, right? So that's kind of like how I assume it would really work, because they can't exist as one, but they can exist in parallel, right?
I'm forming a theory. Okay, so they do the big...
A game theory?
A mind theory? I don't know. So, the people got together, they sent out the telepathic thought into the ether, then it opens a gate, and something comes through and makes contact. But if you are making contact, if you were the beings making contact with a people meaning to contact you, do you just talk to any random person on the street when you go through, or do you try and talk to, like, the authority or whoever's in charge to make contact?
Well, they did say that it was explicitly people who'd witnessed, like, Mothman and stuff with Johnny Akeel, and people who'd had, like, alien encounters and stuff. It wasn't just random people.
Yeah, I mean, like, later on, it wasn't just random people, but, like, day one, they probably talked to, like, world leaders and stuff, and the world leaders would be like, hey, can you keep this on the down low for us? Maybe it's a team effort thing.
It depends on, like...
It might be mutually beneficial between our world leaders and these alien beings.
Okay, but let's...
There was talk about aliens running the government.
Let's assume that, like, these alien dudes, right, like, we don't necessarily know their social structure. Maybe they're, like, some hive mind thing, right? So, like, if that is what you come from, for sure you just come over here and talk to random people.
So, Borg, because you think any one person is all the people.
Exactly, right? Or something like that, you know?
Some of them are just short.
You ever think about what a... Short. You ever think about what a favor Q did by introducing the Federation to the Borg so early? And, like, you know, so they knew what they were facing? Because that could have been real bad.
Yeah, that would have been bad, because their whole thing was like, hey, we are accumulating knowledge and assimilating it. And on paper, that almost sounds like a good idea. Meeting the Borg, it sounds like a bad idea.
Where are my Borgers at, dude?
Borgers. All right.
Always thought
the Borg
were pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
Borg were pretty cool.
There's one guy that always does, like, a Borg cosplay at every convention, and it's fucking on point. It's scary as hell.
Well, we don't know the answers. Partially because it's mysterious, partially because we're dumb. But that won't stop us from asking questions. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. Wherever in the world you are, we appreciate each and every one of you as we approach 200 listens.
I can't believe calling us dumb was in this script.
No, what the fuck?
Where's the lie? Where's the lie? Right now.
I mean, yeah, fair, but like,
shit, man. All right. Let me reshoot that last part. Holy fuck.
Oh, okay.
We don't know the answers. Partially because it's mysterious, partially because we're dumb. But that won't stop us from asking questions. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, wherever in the world you are. We appreciate each and every one of you as we approach 200 total listens. Please visit our Twitter at OOTA_pod or visit our Patreon at patreon.com/OOTAP. That's OOTAP. From all of us to you, have a good night, and remember, everything has an element of the unknown. Good night.
Good night.